This is Fresh Air. I don't know what things are like at your home or where you work, but back in the Fresh Air office, Dorothy has been out sick for several days, Naomi has lost her voice, Amy was sick over Thanksgiving, Roberta and Danny got the flu vaccine. We wanted some advice about the flu and the vaccine, so we called Dr. Walter Gunn, an epidemiologist and flu specialist with the Centers for Disease Control. He's been tracking this year's flu viruses.
So far, we're seeing an early season. It started several weeks early. Back in October, we were picking up isolates of flu, laboratory-confirmed flu. We were seeing outbreaks in schools in November, and we've now had two nursing home outbreaks. The level of activity and the number of isolates is at least several weeks early. Typically, flu starts in December, peaks in February, and then goes away in about March. But in very bad years, it frequently starts early. But in other years where it started early, it might peak early and go away. It's kind of hard to tell. Nobody really knows whether we'll have a early peak and it'll go away, or whether this is the beginning of a long season. Just not possible to tell.
You know, I've never had the flu vaccine, and I always thought that the flu vaccine was recommended primarily for people over 65 or for people who had respiratory problems or other problems that would leave them endangered if they had the flu. Now I'm reading in the newspaper that it's been recommended that, you know, virtually everybody get it. Can I ask you what you think about who should be getting the flu vaccine, if in fact you can, if in fact your doctor has any?
Sure. The ACIP, the Immunization Practices Committee, recommends flu vaccine for anyone 6 months or older who doesn't want to get the flu, but it primarily stresses the importance of people who are in the high-risk group for complications to be immunized. And these are people who are 65 and older, even if they're in otherwise good health, people in nursing homes and chronic care facilities, people with chronic pulmonary and cardiovascular problems, including people with asthma, people with chronic metabolic diseases like diabetes or renal dysfunction, kidney problems, or immunosuppression, and also children and teenagers from 6 months to 18 years who happen to be on long-term aspirin therapy for other reasons because of the increased risk of Reye syndrome. But in addition to those people, the ACIP also recommends the vaccine for people who could potentially expose the high-risk people to influenza, such as doctors and nurses in hospitals and out-care patient settings, and also especially people who work in nursing homes, or anyone who has a high-risk individual at home who they would expose, including children.
This would include people who work with people who have AIDS.
Yes, yes it does, because they would be at increased risk as well. That's one of the metabolic disorders I was mentioning.
So how effective is the flu vaccine?
It's very effective. It's 70 to 90% effective at preventing flu in a healthy young person. And it's about 50% effective at preventing flu in the elderly, but it's 85% effective at preventing hospitalization and death in the elderly. In other words, it'll protect half the elderly from getting the flu at all, and the bulk of the remainder would have their symptoms reduced by the vaccine.
Now, if I got a flu vaccine and I still got the flu, does that mean my symptoms would be reduced too?
Yes. Yes, it should be. It takes about 2 weeks to build up full immunity. But if you get the flu in the meantime, your symptoms may be reduced.
Mm-hmm. If you have AIDS or if you test HIV positive, are you exposing yourself to risks if you take the flu vaccine?
No. In fact, the vaccine is inactivated. You can't get the flu from the vaccine. And people who are immunocompromised, such as AIDS patients, should be immunized.
Well, I've been reading there isn't much vaccine left. What's the situation now?
Well, we've had reports of spot shortages, but that's typical in most years. We haven't had any general shortage that we're aware of. The manufacturers, and there are four of them, have manufactured 32 million doses this year. And, in fact, this week are releasing an additional 650,000 doses. Most of it is in the hands of private physicians. So if your health department perhaps has run out, then just check with the local physician. Should be able to find it.
You know, I sometimes have this attitude that I don't think is uncommon, that I don't really feel like putting toxins in my system, you know, through the vaccine. Is that a silly attitude to have?
Well, if a person happens to be in the high-risk group, then they are at great risk of complications for the flu. Therefore, the flu vaccine would definitely be a benefit to somebody who's in the high-risk group. Something on the order of 20,000 Americans die of influenza complications in an average flu year. And in even the lightest flu years, it's about 10,000 die. And in heavy years, like 1957 with the Asian flu, about 70,000 Americans died that year. So it's really a matter of providing protection for people who are in the high-risk groups in particular.
But if you're not in a high-risk group, you know, there's a concern that if you get the flu vaccine, maybe you'll get side effects. You know, maybe you'll not feel good for the next day or two.
And... Well, the vaccine is not recommended for people who have severe allergies to eggs, because the vaccine is produced in eggs. And it's not recommended for people who currently have a fever. They should wait till the fever's over. But for other people getting the vaccine, very, very few people have any reaction at all. It's about 20 or 30% of the people who are vaccinated might have a very mildly sore arm for a day, maybe a degree of fever. But that's the typical reaction. But other than that, reactions are few and far between.
Did you get vaccinated?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not in the high-risk group yet, but I get vaccinated.
My guest is Dr. Walter Gunn of the Centers for Disease Control. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the flu with Dr. Walter Gunn, who is an epidemiologist and flu specialist at the Centers for Disease Control. When you have the flu, at what point is it worth seeing a doctor? And I ask that knowing that there's no medicine that's going to kill a virus.
Well, okay, two things. One is, it's always a good idea to call your doctor when you get the flu anyway. There may be something about your particular health status that would cause him to want to take some special precautions. So I advise always call your doctor and let him know. Number two, there is a drug that's effective at combating the flu. It's called amantadine, and this is a prescription drug which can reduce the symptoms of influenza. It's used particularly in nursing home outbreaks. It both prevents the flu and it reduces the symptoms once you have it.
For all the strains or just for one strain?
For the A strain in particular.
And there's a lot of that going around this year?
Right now, 99% of what we're seeing out there is A.
Any side effects?
There are side effects. They have to be carefully monitored for dizziness. And mm-hmm. Nausea, but that's why it's a prescription drug. You have to monitor that.
When is an antibiotic appropriate when you have the flu? Antibiotics kill bacteria, they don't kill viruses.
That's
but doctors often prescribe antibiotics when you're home with the flu.
Yeah, they do. If they're particularly concerned about the development of a secondary bacterial infection, then they sometimes administer antibiotics. When you have influenza, you develop a fever early on, and the fever usually goes down within a few days. But if it is going down and then suddenly rises again, that's a good indication that you might be developing a secondary infection, and you should, in particular, then call your doctor, let your doctor know that you've spiked a second temperature.
When you say secondary infection, you mean maybe like a bacterial respiratory infection?
That's right. Yeah, right. Pneumonia.
But what is it about a virus that is so difficult to attack as compared to a bacterial infection?
Well, viruses actually get into cells and have some protection by being inside the cells. So they're more difficult to deal with that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are so pressured at work that even though they feel like they're coming down with the flu or that they have the flu, they're going to drag themselves into work. Is that a really foolish thing to do?
Well, it does expose other people. A person who has the flu is infectious and can infect other people, usually from about one day before they have any symptoms until about anywhere from 3 to 5 days into the illness.
Are there any special precautions for treating children who have the flu?
Yes, parents should be recommended not to give aspirin or any product containing aspirin to children or teenagers for symptoms of the flu or chickenpox because of the increased risk of Reye syndrome, which is often fatal.
What's the difference between the flu and a cold? And if you're not going to a doctor who's going to take a culture, can you really be sure what you have?
You cannot be sure of what you have unless you have it cultured, that the symptoms are frequently quite similar. And it takes a laboratory test to actually tell whether it's flu or not. And we have nursing home outbreaks that we respond to, and we send epidemiologists out and get throat swabs and culture it, and then after a few days we're able to tell what's actually going on there.
Does it matter if you have a low fever and you don't feel good and you've got all the kind of respiratory symptoms that might be a cold or might be a flu, does it matter if you know what you have?
If you were in a high-risk group and if you thought there's a chance that you're coming down with influenza, it does matter because they could administer amantadine, which would reduce your symptoms and possibly save your life.
Does flu always come with a fever?
Yes, sudden onset of fever, chills, myalgia, muscle-aches and pains, and dry cough and a red sore throat, characteristic flu.
You mentioned a dry cough. Why is it a dry cough that comes with the flu?
Cough, because bacterial infections frequently result in mucus being produced, which would be sort of a wet cough. But flu typically has a dry cough.
So if your flu suddenly turns into a really productive cough, is that a sign you might have a secondary infection?
Quite possible.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that the flu strain changes every year?
The influenza virus mutates regularly. There are shifts and there's drift. The drift are fairly minor changes in the genetic structure, but occasionally there are shifts where it's a major change. And in those years, we see more mortality because the population hasn't had experience with that particular virus.
You mean there's no immunity?
That's right. Wouldn't have any natural immunity to it.
Why are the flus called like the Asian flu or the Beijing flu? Is this where the flu strain originated?
It's where the flu strain is first isolated. And they're not all Asian. We've had A Mississippi and A Texas and A New Jersey and A Russia and A England. So they're isolated all around the world, but they frequently are from Asia, and no one knows really why.
Well, I wish you good health, and I thank you very much for talking with us.
You too. Bye now.
Dr. Walter Gunn is an epidemiologist and flu specialist at the Centers for Disease Control. This is Fresh Air.